Did you hear Tom Griffiths, the historian, on Late Night Live last Tuesday on those who deny climate change, as if it's a matter of belief?
Yes, isn't that a very interesting way of undermining understanding of what is a scientific theory? Scientific theory is not a matter of negotiation, it's not a matter of voting, it's not a matter of belief. Dissent is only credible if it's founded on testable evidence and has an alternative holistic theory. And I believe that the IPCC has probably made a mistake in using the word consensus, which we hear a lot, because consensus sounds like politics, not science. It evokes compromise and negotiation. It suggests somehow that majorities are instrumental and possibly temporary. And it seems to allow space for contrary or dissenting opinions without need for new evidence, that you can have a political stance or an emotional stance or a stance on belief. And skeptics and contrarians will often use those terms about belief, about dissent, about being an agnostic on this issue, as if it is a matter for personal belief.
Professor Tom Griffiths on LNL earlier this week. He's at the Australian National University and wrote about such dissent for the Griffith Review. Graham Redfern, who's a journalist based in Brisbane, has also been tracking dissenters with professional qualifications in science, who've also been attracting headlines recently and causing concern that they're paying the penalty for being awkward.
In the early 1990s, American lawyer and writer Mike Godwin was getting sick of the comment threads he was reading on internet forums, or at least one thing in particular about them. So he came up with a rule to describe what he was reading, hoping that once he'd pointed it out, people might stop doing it. Godwin's law, as it's now known, says the longer a discussion lasts on the internet, the more likely it is that someone will come up with an analogy about Hitler or the Nazis. For anyone who follows the climate change debate these days, whether that's online or anywhere else, you might recognise that feeling of inevitability that Godwin used to get. Rarely do you have to wait more than a few minutes or read more than a couple of comments on an internet thread before the conspiracy theories start to fly. Climate change, and yes, we're talking about the kind that humans cause, is a secretive plot by elitist socialist scientists who want to take over the world with fraudulent graphs and manipulated thermometer readings and secret mind-controlling drugs hidden in latte coffees served by robotic Nazi droids or something. And these warmists will stop at nothing until they get their way, including getting anyone who doesn't agree with them fired from their jobs. Take the recent case of Dr. Murray Salby, an American scientist who was sacked in May from his job at Macquarie University in Sydney. Dr. Salby is a climate science skeptic. He claims that rises in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere haven't been caused by humans. Some sympathetic commentators and writers covering this story about Dr. Salby were so blind drunk on the after-dinner conspiracy liquor that actual facts and scepticism remained on ice. News Limited commentator Andrew Bolt said Dr. Salby had been persecuted for challenging the global warming faith. Bolt noted that Tim Flannery, Australia's climate commissioner, was also at Macquarie University, hinting that Flannery might have had a role in getting Salby sacked. Bolt later admitted he had no actual evidence for this, but didn't bother to check that Tim Flannery doesn't actually work at Macquarie University anymore. Bolt also wrote that Dr. Salby's job title was climate chair, when no such position actually existed. The Australian newspaper ran a sympathetic report about Dr. Salby, describing him as the chair of Macquarie's climate department, except Macquarie doesn't have a climate department. Several other climate sceptic bloggers in Australia, the UK and the United States also suggested that Dr. Salby had been kicked out because he was a sceptic. So why was Dr. Salby fired? Well, under this glare of conspiratorial climate blogs, Macquarie University decided they should set the record straight. Dr. Salby's views on climate change had nothing to do with him being fired, the university said. Rather, he was fired because he had refused to teach. He'd breached university policies. He'd booked a trip to Europe using an unauthorised travel service when he should have been back in Sydney teaching a class. Then all of these breathless, blow-by-blow, day-by-day updates stopped. They stopped just after I'd written a story about some goings-on immediately before Dr. Salby had arrived at Macquarie in February 2008. There'd been a long-running investigation by the National Science Foundation in America. That's a key organisation that hands out taxpayer funds for science research. The foundation's investigation found that Dr. Selby had, and I quote, engaged in a long-running course of deceptive conduct involving his university in Colorado and involving the foundation. The investigation said Dr. Selby had likely fabricated timesheets, he'd misled investigators about his role in two companies, and he'd failed to fill out conflict of interest forms at the university properly. The foundation banned Dr. Selby from having anything to do with taxpayer-funded grants from them for 3 years. Suddenly, rather than this being a case of a climate scientist being fired for contrarian views, it became a case of the great missing media outrage. Where were all these follow-up stories? Now it seemed Dr. Selby's story was no longer blog or newsworthy. Funny that. Only a couple of weeks earlier, bloggers and sceptic commentators had spun a similar line when it became public knowledge that another favourite climate science sceptic had been let go from his university post. This time it was Bob Carter, an unpaid adjunct professor at James Cook University in Townsville. The sceptic community was positively apoplectic. Another climate scientist kicked out for refusing to toe the party line. Except, according to James Cook University, Bob Carter's adjunct status simply lapsed. And it was allowed to lapse because Dr. Carter just wasn't doing anything to contribute to the university anymore. Bob Carter, for those that don't know, and I accept that this is probably most of you, has only actually written a couple of scientific papers on climate change, both of which have been heavily criticised. It can sometimes be educational to have a dig around into the backstory of contrarian scientists. Another Australian example of the curiousness of climate scepticism is Dr. Albert Parker, who currently works at RMIT University in Melbourne. Dr. Parker is an automotive engineer, but he's written several scientific papers that all pour scorn on the idea that sea level rise, caused by global warming, will be a serious threat in the future. Dr. Parker's interesting because before he joined RMIT, he was at the University of Ballarat, where his name was Alberto Beretti. I asked Dr. Parker why he changed his name, but he didn't seem to want to say. I also asked him why it was that he seemed to be publishing papers simultaneously under the two different names, and he didn't answer that either. Dr. Parker, or Beretti, has a regular writing partner for his sea level research, a climate sceptic from Australia called Thomas Watson. Mr. Watson is on the record as saying that the dominant force on Earth isn't gravity, but magnetism, and it's magnetism that controls the climate. He explained to one US internet radio presenter how he'd had this magnetic epiphany while backstage at an Ice Deadford concert in Ballarat. After seeing a bright pinkish light in the sky, Thomas Watson said that he had feared the moon had gone out of orbit, but then decided it probably wasn't that, and was much more likely a UFO, maybe from a secret government project. Then there's Ken Ring, a New Zealander who first came to my attention a few years ago when he appeared as a climate change expert on a popular breakfast TV show in Australia. It generally goes on at sunrise. Ken Ring reckons you can predict the weather, and he does make hundreds of predictions, too many to keep track of, by watching the moon and the sun. It's not clear why the TV producers thought Ken Ring was a climate expert, especially given his publishing record. In 1998, Ken Ring was the co-author of a book for cat-loving New Age types with the title Pawmistry: How to Read Your Cat's Paws. It turned out that before Ken Ring was a weather expert, he'd been a school magician, a clown, and, according to the book, a psychic with a passion for reading palms and paws. I asked Ken Ring about the book. He claimed he'd written it as a joke, but I wasn't so sure. I mean, it pays to be sceptical.
Doesn't it? Graham Redfern writes the DSmog blog, and he also writes for The Guardian. He lives in Brisbane.